Reader's Notes.
Hi, it's Rena Jenkins. I mean, duh, it's been Rena Jenkins the last 35 hours, but it's still me. Hi. The podcast you just listened to was recorded as an ITPE 2018, gift for Keeper of Seeds. I have, I think, 8 million different thoughts about Children of the Force and this universe that's been created, and I've had a lot of thoughts for many days, and hopefully I can get them all out in a semi-coherent manner. And if it's not, then it'll just be whatever it is. So, to start with, Keeper of Seeds, I hope you enjoyed this. We met via long Star Wars podfic with your podfic of Wake the Storm that basically punted me into prequels era podfic and storytelling in general. And so when I got you as my recipient, it only made sense to do something also equally long and ridiculous. And of course, Rebels is my new home away from home, I guess. So that seemed pretty reasonable, too. Actually, hilarious. When the mods were giving out who your recipient is for this year, I got the most amazing letter. Congrats, you've been assigned Keeper of Seeds for ITPE. They've requested the following fandoms: Buffy the Vampire Slayer, DCU, DCU TV, The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl, Discworld, Jupiter Ascending, Star Wars, Rebels, Originals, Prequels, Clone Wars, Tangled, Teen Titan, Teen Wolf, One on Earth, Young Justice. And I was like, oh my god, that's my entire list. This is amazing. And then I got to the link, and the mods had linked me to my own list. So, that was sort of the omen that kickstarted ITPE 2018. I got my own gift by accident, and then I got yours. And you actually asked for a lot of other fandoms that I didn't really match with you on, like Anne of Green Gables, Detroit Become Human, Dragon Age, basically everything else on your list except for Star Wars. So my idea was basically, oh, Star Wars, we're just gonna go full throttle. And we did! 35 hours later, here we are. For a hot second, many hot seconds, I very seriously considered doing Devil's Backbone for you, but at the time of recipient announcements, it was still a work in progress. And all three of the mods gave me a very strongly worded no, I am not allowed to record a work in progress. So that's the other part of sort of the mood of this ITPE 2018. This is actually the longest podfic that I've recorded in a short amount of time kind of a situation. Queen's Gambit took me almost 10 months to finish, and I did this one in less than 3. And in the meantime, I also had oral surgery, went to podfication, and went home for Thanksgiving. So, you know, there were some interruptions, but hot damn, did this get finished, and that's great. I'm so proud of all of us. And by us, I mean me. And also Litra, because Litra was the most astounding, amazing beta listener for all of this. Litra found all of the, like, you've applied sound effects, you've applied them wrong kind of moments. And I was, like, straight up saying, you know, I'm not planning on doing any re-records, so please tell me things that make it hard to understand. Which is why there are a couple chapters towards the beginning where you can hear like a random plinking sound that is rain on my AC unit that has no AC. It's just a big metal box sticking out of the wall and it makes a fuck ton of noise. But guess what? It's already recorded. Atmosphere. Jazz hands. Anyway. The music for this podfic was inspired by a couple tracks that H-Line gave me upon request. Thank you, H-Line, for giving me a place to start and some really helpful, notes and commentary about, like, which songs go with which chapters. And it was really good to, like, this was the core of the mix. And then I was like, it wouldn't be a mix by me if there wasn't too much Bandom in it also, which is why My Chem and Panic are on here. Yeah, there were a lot of amazing songs that sort of either were, like, perfect fit for different things that were happening or, like, informed the way that you looked at things that were happening. The only major thing that I changed from H-Line's original sort of proto-fan mix was Watch Me Rise by Mickey Echo was actually in H-Line's notes for when the kids are first giving Ezra that sort of cuddle pile on Drummond Koss when he's come to rescue them. I really like the idea of it being sort of the final note of this podfic is I've been through a lot of shit and now things, I can only go upwards from here. So I wanted to save that for like the very final sort of mood that you take away from the piece. Even though, holy fuck, is there a lot of hurt in this Hurt Comfort? Like, so much hurt. Like, there were definitely points where I was safety tabbing away for other fluffy things. So, if you need to, if you have in the past needed, while listening to this, needed to safety pod and pick up something else, I got a shit ton of other stuff that's Star Wars that's coming out right around the same time. So feel free to pack yourself up with a whole bunch of humor and joy to get yourself through the hurt. And it's possible that hearing it aloud may actually make things worse. Emotionally devastating. I used the phrase emotional devastation, I think, 48 times between Thanksgiving and Podfic gifting on December 18th because, yeah, H-Line just takes a hammer and smacks you in all your joints until you're a sobbing, quivering ball of trauma and sadness just like Ezra, and it's great, and you say thank you. There were so many things I loved about this verse. I loved that it was an alternate universe. Here's the pivotal thing. It's not about Anakin, though. It's about everybody else who has to live in the universe that was changed because of his decision, but it's not primarily Anakin's story. And I thought that was really great because there's a lot of these almost Easter egg type moments where you see our main characters living through what this universe is right now in the galaxy far, far away, and decisions that they make and situations that they're interacting with, you can kind of trace it back to that point of divergence, and then like everything makes sense that it's following a path. I don't know if I'm explaining it right, but I like, okay, the thing with the Inquisitors. You look at how hardcore the Inquisitors are going, right? And part of it is the bit that Mace spells out when they're, I think it's chapter 39 or so, when they're having that big meeting on the Jedi ship, right? And he's like, hey, this guy used to be a temple guard. All the rest of the temple guards got picked up and then they fell. And that's why they're striving so hard to crush the light, because they know what they're missing out on, right? And it's just like this little bit that ties into one line that's implied in the High Inquisitor's like thing in Rebels when they're in the Lothal Temple. And I was just like, oh, tell me more about this. Tell me more about the Jedi who are left, who are going to have to fight their comrades. And there's no way to bring them back. There's no way to save them. Because Anakin really was an anomaly in that situation, right? And in the Death Star. But also, if Palpatine doesn't have a Darth Vader to sort of be the his will upon the galaxy, the physical manifestation of his evil impulses, then he has to channel those evil impulses through something else. So if he doesn't have the amount of evil that Darth Vader was putting into the galaxy by doing all of those things, then that evil has to go somewhere else. So you see it in the genocide on Mandalore, and you see it in sort of the recreation of the Sith hierarchy that he's setting up with the Inquisitors. I really liked that, that you see it again and again within this story, that without Vader as sort of the focal point, what other direction did, without Vader to take up the Emperor's attention, what direction did his sort of evil impulses take? And I thought that was really, really, what a cool sort of outside looking in moment to see that and notice it. I also really loved, well, I mean, I was devastated about what happened to Mandalore because Mandalorians are my favorite of all of the things. But acknowledging that not everything is going to be, I don't know, I liked seeing that here is, if even if we're not building the Death Star, or maybe they still are, we don't know, that's not the point of this story, right? And a project like that, it takes enough years in pre-planning that they could still be pre-planning the Death Star right now, we just wouldn't know about it. But seeing that this is sort of the other direction, not just straight up disintegration, but destruction of a culture in its entirety anyway, right? So H-Line, it hurt a lot to read that, but you did really good, and I felt like it was very within character, I guess, for the universe or something, for this verse. I don't know. I liked it, but also it made me sad. But also I liked it, so that's where we are. Other thoughts I had. Kanan and Grey and Janice. You guys. This family that's like tied together in all of these terrible fucked up ways, but they can't let each other go and they won't let each other fall. And even when like they're, even when Kanan is forcibly pushing away, and even when Grey is all tied up inside with guilt and trauma, and even when Janice is like, why, if my life would be so much easier if I just cut these ties and run. And yet by the end, we see this progression where they find their way back to the closeness that they would have had, you know, before everything went wrong. And I love it. Plus, okay, the thing with Mace and Kanan got me all kinds of fucked up. Because on the one hand, it's like, he still, his lineage still exists. Mace could make things better. But then the whole bit where he's like, his name is Caleb, and it felt a little bit like dead naming. But like at the same time, they're both coming from this place where they're not acknowledging that the other person has grown and changed, so they don't know how to fix it quite. And then, but they're going to work on it because Mace and Kanan are going to have to interact because of Ezra, and it's going to be great. And Kanan's going to have to figure out his family. Because he's going to want to do the best that he can for Ezra. So he's going to kind of have to introduce Ezra to his Jedi grandpa. Right? And then all of that stuff about how a Jedi shouldn't feel like that, in Kanan's reactions after having tea with Mace, and sort of seeing that as much as the Jedi Order is clinging to their traditions that they can still preserve, and what's left of their culture that they can preserve in exile, seeing the sort of the edges of decay and the way that you can't cling to something when it clearly wasn't working in the first place, and oh, that dynamic that you put together, what if some of them lived? Shit, now we have to live with it. That was gorgeous, H-Line, and it gave me so many great thoughts about, like on the one hand, yay, Quinlan's alive, you saved my boy, but on the other hand, oh, fuck, now he's kind of racist? Does that mean that the clones, I mean, because, like, if so many of my faves are still alive, does that mean Aayla's still alive? Or does Quinn have all sorts of terrible feelings about clones because Bly still managed to kill Aayla? I don't want her to be fridged. But, like, shit get worse before it get better. Shit gets so much worse. I had feelings about Anakin and Kanan as well, because it's not Anakin's story. It really is the ghost story. But, like, one of the things that kind of bugged me a little bit about Rebels is that when Kanan and Ahsoka met up, I didn't get that sort of fangirling moment, because Ahsoka was the Padawan to the hero without fear, who was the media darling of the Jedi Order. Everyone knew who Anakin Skywalker was, so by association, everyone knew who Ahsoka Tano was. Plus, there was that whole, like, okay, she got kicked out of the Order, you know, trial shenanigans. Kanan should have been like, oh my god, you're Ahsoka, when he met her. He should have been all of that in a bag of chips, and they didn't give me that. They gave him all, like, Kanan self-possessed and everything. Like, no, he should have been a little bit awestruck and been like, does Anakin Skywalker really eat live bugs? Or did he? I mean, because he's dead now, and, you know, like, all that tied in, right? So, to see Kanan and Anakin on that crate having a moment and being like, he is a little bit starstruck, but also, like, Anakin's there to be extra real and bleeding on things. That was a really good moment for me. Speaking of good moments, when we met Commander Sato, second in command, and his last name was Katarn, I was like, wait. And then he was like, here is my tragic backstory about my missing son. Your missing son, Kyle? My missing son, Kyle. I had such joy. You don't understand. Kyle and Mara and even frickin' Galen. You guys! Having these cameos from the Legends characters who are from the books that I grew up with. Kyle Katarn. He's grown up enough now that he's probably not going to get possessed by the temple at Yavin 4. Unless he does when they're all recuperating, in which case, oh fuck, I just jinxed it, didn't I? But Tiny Mara. You guys, would this universe's Mara still grow up to be an Emperor's Hand? Would the Emperor's Hand be extra fucked up from having gone through the Inquisitorious First Rite? Because the whole thing is like they're the physical manifestation of his will upon the galaxy, a little bit less than Vader, but like their will is suborned to his. So like, seeing the way that the Academy was a slave-breaking camp and a, you know, crush your spirit kind of thing. Damn, how that ties in with the Emperor's Hand program and all of that. Oh. So one day Mara's gonna make little Luke, meet little Luke, and it's gonna be, oh, I love it. First sight, it's gonna be so great. One thing that, I mean, obviously nothing really happened yet, so I don't know. But like Anakin and Mara and Padme, sort of that little scene that Luminara walks in on. But then we've got Starkiller. We've got Galen Marek. He should be Anakin's Padawan because he was Anakin's apprentice. So like, clearly they have an affinity for each other. Even if it is an evil affinity, but that's not the point, right? One thing that did bug me a little bit is we know where Luke is. He's on the ship with Uncle Ben learning to be a Jedi. Where's Leia? So I headcanoned that they left Leia on Naboo with Padme's family. And if it turns out in the sequel that Leia is not on Naboo with the Naberis, I will not be disappointed, but I will need an AU where Leia, instead of going with the Organas, goes with the Naberis, because Obi-Wan and Yoda are basically like, Palpatine is so secure in his victory right now, and he thinks he's so totally crushed Naboo and all of its, you know, he's got a blind spot for that. So that's the safest place to put baby Leia. And then she grows up with the Naberis, and she grows up with her cousin Pooja, who's her sister Pooja, because the best way to hide a baby is to just be like, oh, I have a new baby. And then maybe she goes into politics anyway. And it's like all these extra levels So yeah, basically now I need an AU where Leia goes to Naboo and lives with them and grows up there. Yeah. Someone make that happen. Oh, the stuff with Sabine, though. She's so reasonable. It makes sense. Here's this stranger who can basically get inside your brain and make you relive the worst thing you've ever seen over and over again. And everyone's like, yeah, he's chill. No, it's so reasonable for her to want to go to whatever length she needs to save her family. That is such a Sabine move. I love it. It was hurtful because, you know, you're rooting for Ezra. But like, no, not out of character at all. This is the kid who would rather blow up the Imperial Academy than, you know, take orders from a dipshit we see in Rebels, right? I love her. And it makes sense that she would do whatever it takes to save her family from this person who's possibly brainwashing and mind traumatizing them. Excuse me. Anyway, there were so many character interactions in this story that just punched me in the heart and made me love it. And when it turned out that the Academy was based on Drummond Cast, and I was like, wait, the Sith planet? And then Luminara was like, wait, the Sith planet? And I was like, yes, I already knew about this. This is great. Also, Seventh Sister. I love her so much. She's an evil bastard in this, but she is my favorite. And the fact that I got to play around with a Seventh Sister vocal filter for this and use it in so many ways. I went to a Star Wars Galactic Night thing at MGM Hollywood Studios last summer, and I went with a brother-in-law, and he was sort of like, okay, whatever rides. And I was like, no, character experiences. And there is a photo of me interacting with Seventh Sister, and I swear I fucking swooned. It was gorgeous. It was a terrible photo because like we were interacting and they didn't actually take the picture until after the interacting was done. So it kind of looked like I was going for a high five and she was like not giving me one. But the experience before the camera took, anyway, the point is Seventh Sister. I love her. I love her so much. She's my favorite evil minion and she's fantastic and she's a bastard in this story. But getting to voice her and like putting that extra glee and malice for those lines, so much fun. Also, the Eighth Brother. He has 4 fucking lines on the show. Do you know how weird my YouTube stats were from replaying that clip over and over and over again in order to make the vocal filter for him? So many times. But again, getting to play these gleefully, soullessly evil characters was a lot of fun in the vocalization of this. In the recording of this podfic, I had a lot of fun getting to put my twist on those characters and make them properly menacing. Yeah, in general, the sound effects for this, I had a supreme blast. The only thing I didn't do, I had talked about with Litra, doing actual audio rips from the show for Chopper to do like his actual beeps and whines and fart sounds and stuff like that. But I dug my heels in because I didn't want it to be such a big thing and then like, and here's my single sound effect, here's my single credit. So everything in here is either physical Foley or like me saying a word and then running it through like 18 different types of vocal filters. Yeah, so it's all by me and no credits for other people's SFX. So yeah, I very nearly did Chopper's actual voice for this, but I didn't want to have 35 hours, one single sound effect credit. I know there's stuff I'm forgetting to say about the way this universe works and the way we get to explore Kanan's backstory and Hera's, like, oh, that was the thing. Kanan's alcoholism and that interaction between Hera and Janice, I really appreciated that. because, like, I get it. It's a kid's show. It aired on Disney Channel. So we have to talk, like, we're not going to address certain, you know, topics or whatever. But to see the Kanan he was then, highly traumatized and incredibly fucked up and, you know, self-medicating in a way that was not healthy, to the Kanan that he is now, which is also incredibly fucked up, but, like, having a support system to help him deal with it, that was glorious. And I was really glad to see, like, an exploration of how Kanan was there and how people know him then at this type, and Genesis sort of reactions to be like, well, you have to check here first, obviously. And Hera being like, you're both sort of refusing to see that each other has changed. And this is a prime example of why you haven't noticed that. And then, like, another example of Kanan and Ezra, and both of them with their sort of, like, support structure that helps them grow as a person, right? They both sort of have these similar, I don't know if it's similar arcs or just, like, that they're mirrors of each other. But it's very much that you have to keep going and you can't acknowledge your trauma until you're in a place where you're safe enough to do so, right? And seeing sort of Ezra being like, this is me seeming like I'm fine, but the entire time I'm just suppressing, and fronting, and not acknowledging my trauma. And then he makes a home for himself, and then he becomes sort of secure enough to be vulnerable, and that's when things come out. But it's not until he's, like, secure enough to deal with it and safe enough to deal with it that things come out. And I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm saying with this sentence, but, like, I liked seeing that trauma is a curve. It's not a straight line. And seeing that for Ezra now, how he was coping with things and how he's not done coping with things just because they saved the kids, and how there were child psychologists in the team. That was so great. There's a Wookiee character who is not just a thug. No offense to Chewbacca, but, like, his, when we first meet him, his prime character trait is he can pull your arms off. This Wookiee character, who could also pull your arms off, his prime character trait is child psychology. How great is that? But, like, seriously, so much fucking drama. There were definitely parts where it was like, how are you still walking as a person? How are you not curled up in a ball sobbing? But, like, then we see Kanan, and he's like, yeah, sometimes I am curled up in a ball sobbing and non-functional. And then I have a support structure in place between my family and my, you know, the people I can rely on to help me so I can get myself back together. They're not good coping mechanisms. And Hera totally calls him out on it. But, like, coping mechanisms and learning to deal with your trauma and process that shit. And then growing as a person, which was so good. And then Luminara, from how she first meets Ezra and thinks he's, like, her knee-jerk reaction is he has touched the dark side, he must be completely irredeemable, to at the end with Jai, where everyone's like, no, this kid killed another child, we must shoot him in the face so he doesn't kill us. And she's like, no, obviously, there are extenuating circumstances, we can't help him if we don't give him a chance. And then Galen! Luminara being like, I don't want to kill you. I want to find another way. Clearly. And just being like, all of these moments that she took from meeting Ezra and seeing it in another, on another kid, and being like, wait, shit. I'm letting my past experiences color my end. And it was so good for me. Luminara is such a badass and I love her so much. And I'm so glad that she's not a mummified corpse in a box somewhere. That episode fucked me over. That episode of Rebels, the Rise of the Old Masters or whatever, like, that episode just fucked me over. And even though Kanan still got a lot of that, like, I don't think I can be the best Jedi dad for Ezra, but also, I love him. And we have a force bond. And we can feel each other's emotions, and oh my goodness, that is the comfort part of her comfort that I am here for. The, like, the violent and visceral and snarling protective instincts and the you come before me even when my head is stuck up my own ass. Oh yeah, by the way, chapter 42. I didn't save any bloopers because there would have just been so much fucking swearing. I'm sorry, H-line, but you have some sentences that are four lines long and sometimes I had to stop breathing to swear at you. But no, there was a moment in chapter 42 where I was like, yes, Kanan gets his head out of his ass! And then I cut that line out. But yeah, direct visceral reaction to Kanan pulling his head out of his ass. It was beautiful. But just seeing that, where they fall into it so easy, and then they both start second-guessing it, and then when they're like, no, I need to foster this because it's what I want, and I can have nice things, and I will do the thing that puts me in danger to keep you safe, and oh, just all of it so much. In conclusion, Children of the Force fucked me up. It was great. Kind of hope it fucked you up too, listener. Keep proceeds. I hope this made your ITPE a good one. You may not get this finished until 2019. We'll see how that goes. Please feel free to, as you're reactioning to all of this, please feel free to dump your feelings in my inbox. All listeners, dump your feelings in the comments and I will squee right back at you. H-line, I when I first started reading Rebels, I had actually come across this fic on AO3 like 8 or 9 times. And I was like, okay, this is big, it's meaty, it's plotty, it's got some of my faves in the tags. This sounds great. But then I started with a poor viewpoint. And I wasn't as familiar with Janice or Gray or, like, sort of the pre-canon stuff. And, like, having already, how do I say? Having read that first part first, it threw me out a little bit. But then if I went back into it and was like, okay, read the big part first and then read part one as sort of a post-prequel, then it gave me a little more feels. So yeah, I picked this up the first time beginning of 2018, and it took me until the end of 2018 to actually get all the way through it, but I'm so glad that I did. And yeah, this is a feat. Thank you to Litra for listening through all of these hours, multiple takes, as I had to go back in and fix things and catching all the places where I put the wrong audio filter or my tracks didn't line up quite right or things just didn't make sense and my volumes were all fucked. And thank you to the ITPE mods for, well, pairing us up and almost giving me my own self. I'm not going to get over that. I'm sorry. But yes, and also telling me to wait on Devil's Backbone until it was finished. And then I was like, wait, hang on. This other thing that I've been looking at and I've had in my to be read later folder for years and years. Okay, months and months. Hang on. This would be perfectly perfect. Because it's got found family. It's got Force Bonds. It's got so many of my favorite characters live. It's got canon divergence. It's got a fuck ton of limb severing, which is how you know it's Star Wars. It's not Star Wars if nobody loses a limb, okay? It just, ugh. And I'm also really proud of myself for having gotten this done in less than 3 months. So that's pretty cool too. And now that I've been talking for, fuck, like 45 minutes, yeah, too long, didn't listen, I got feels. Thank you for listening. I hope if you didn't enjoy it that this made you cry, and if you did enjoy it, I hope it made you smile, and have a nice day.